What is going on, everybody? It's another Al Gattullo Craft Beer Cast right here on AM 970, The Answer. We have got a fantastic show for you. A guest that's going to be joining me a little bit later. They are celebrating their 8th anniversary as a brewery this weekend. An interview I got a chance to do live from that brewery. I could tell you all the places where to follow me, but my goodness, if you've been listening to the show and you don't know where to follow me by now, there's a problem. So that music to open up the show, that is Satchvi. That is the Sea of Emotion Part 1. That is a collaboration between Joe Satriani and Steve Vai. Got a chance to see them last Monday in Red Bank at the Count Basie Theater. And I have to say, my best friend and I, who we went to the show together, we were discussing this when we left. Both guitarists are fantastic, but I feel like it's almost like a little ego-driven, right? I mean, you got two guys just basically playing out there. At least Satriani can sing, and I think Joe Satriani has more range where he can play different things, blues, rock, metal. I feel like Steve Vai is a little bit more one note, and it's not to take away from his playing. It's just my feeling of what I saw. They're both fantastic guitar players, and it was a lot of fun to see them. But, yeah, I felt like, I don't know, it was a little like self, I don't know, it was almost like going to see, like, Yngwie Malmsteen, you know? Or, like, when I saw Al Di Meola, but Al Di Meola is in a completely different universe. Jazz guitarist, there's passion, there's I don't know, I'm not trying to disparage the show, but I felt like Vai was the weaker of the two, and that's saying something. You know what I mean? And somebody said, you know, Steve Vai sounds better in a band than he does solo, and I sort of agree with that. If he's a part of an ensemble, he's much better. And to be quite honest, when Joe Satriani played with Chickenfoot, he was fantastic. I really thought he was going to go off the rails and just be Buenos Aires, but he kept himself tight and within the band, and that was great. So, yeah, I don't know how many more dates they have left, but if they're in your area, check it out. It was definitely a fun show. Now, coming up in less than 10 minutes from now, Chuck Aaron, the co-owner of Jersey Girl Brewing, is going to join me from his tasting room in Mount Olive, New Jersey. We taped two segments earlier in the week. The 8th anniversary party took place all weekend long. We're going to chat with Chuck about that, their refresh, and a whole lot more. And that's coming up in just a few minutes. Bunch of different things of news to get to. Yes, I'm at the Atlantic City Beer and Music Festival. I was there on Saturday night. We will do a full review of the event on next week's program. But starting up down in South Jersey in Philadelphia, Myers Brewing Company of Philly is announcing they will be opening a sister location in Ocean View, New Jersey, called Myers Lighthouse Brewing Company. The official opening date slated for next month. It'll be announced in the next few weeks. It's located on Route 9 in the town of Ocean View, a quarter mile north of Sea Isle Boulevard. Myers Lighthouse Brewing will feature a tap room as well as outdoor seating and a mini golf course. The brewery will serve a variety of beer styles such as hazy IPAs, sours, stouts, and more. Myers Lighthouse Brewing will focus on bringing exciting, high-quality beer to the Ocean View area and contributing to the vibrant culture of the community. Myers Brewing Company was founded by Mike Myers in the Fishtown neighborhood of Philly back in 2021. They converted an 1800s carriage house into the brewery. They've been serving quality beer ever since. They have cider, wine, and spirits there as well in Philly. At the end of 2023, Myers acquired a mini golf course in Ocean View, designating this location for future expansion. So they have been moving on this now, I guess, for a number of months. And they're going to open a brewery alongside of it as a separate business on the property. And also, Andrew Swanson will be brewing over there. He's originally from Tuckahoe. He moved to Summers Point. He now resides in Upper Township. He's been brewing professionally since 2017. And in 2020, he graduated from the American Brewers Guild Intensive Brewing Science and Engineering course while serving as head brewer at Swedes Brewing. Swanson has been the head of brewing at Myers in Fishtown since March of 2023. They'll have 12 taps in the tasting room, ample outdoor seating, and it is sure to be a destination for craft beer enthusiasts, as they say. So that's cool. You don't see businesses moving into New Jersey to open up a brewery. So that's good news. We like that. Our friends from Original Sin are releasing three new Original Sin non-alcoholic drinks. Listen to this, including the company's first multi-pack. Crafted with monk fruit, apple cider vinegar, and zero added sugar, these new Original Sin non-alcoholic ciders offer delicious, refreshing, low-calorie options for consumers. The new Widow Family NA series includes Dragon Widow Cider made with dragon fruit, Widow's Tea Cider made with black tea and lemonade, and Golden Widow Cider made with lemon juice. In March of last year, the company launched its first non-alcoholic cider called Original Sin White Widow Cider. And as Gideon Kahl, the founder and president of Original Sin, says, "We could not be more pleased with White Widow's success in both on-premise and off-premise channels. White Widow has appealed to consumers seeking an NA cider that is both a full-flavored and a healthy beverage alternative. They are also featuring their first multi-pack featuring the full lineup of four non-alcoholic Widow cider offerings," which is really cool. And as they explain, apple cider vinegar's health benefits have garnered acclaim over centuries, tracing back to the ancient Roman Empire, which is interesting. Monk fruit is a staple of traditional Chinese medicine for centuries and has emerged as a sought-after natural sugar alternative with potential antioxidant benefits. So that's cool. A couple of non-alcoholic ciders. Haven't seen too much of that, but I'm intrigued. I'm very much intrigued. And we've had Gideon on the show before. Maybe it's time to get him back and talk a little bit more about this. Lawson's Finest has teamed up with Patagonia Provisions to do a lager that is using a special earth-friendly grain. They are doing, what is this, brewing Patagonia Provisions Kernza Lager. So Kernza is deeply rooted, a deep-rooted perennial crop like Kernza requires minimal tilling, increased soil organic matter, improved soil health, and water-holding capacity to help fight the climate crisis. Most grains are planted and harvested annually. Kernza stays in the ground year after year, developing water and nutrient-transmitting roots that can grow to up to 12 feet long. If I'm not mistaken, Brooklyn Brewery did something like this with a Pilsner using Kernza, I think. And I think they were saying this was going to be the hop that would sort of turn beer on its end. Who knows? Apparently, there are a lot of benefits to Kernza. They benefit the environment. They protect soil from erosion. They improve soil structure. They increase ecosystem nutrient retention. A lot of different things. When Kernza is used in brewing, it can make for an interesting beer. So this Patagonia Provisions Lawson's Finest Kernza Lager is a 5.5% ABV limited release. It has a spicy, piney aroma with a clean, refreshing finish. It is now available at the Lawson's Finest Destination Brewery and Taproom in Waitsfield, Vermont. It's also crafted with organic hops and barley. I don't know if this is going to be out for distro. Sounds to me like it is just available at the brewery, but it is interesting to see. I would love to taste this. I'll have to check that out. I'll have to do a little more searching on that one. But I think Brooklyn Brewery did something similar with Kerns. I have to go back in my notes and check it out. Ross Brewing, our friends at Ross Brewing, is doing a big anniversary party weekend at the end of this month, which happens to coincide with my birthday, by the way, all weekend long. So Thursday, April 25th, is an exclusive House of Ross member event. Takes you through a vertical tasting of every one of bourbon barrel aged anniversary stouts. Friday, April 26th, I'm trying to get to this one, hot music duo Dan and John. It is the public release of their two new beers, Year 3 Anniversary Stout and launch party. There's going to be a hot food truck and a party with the New Jersey craft beer team. The NJCB team will be down there. I'm trying to get there for the Friday night. Saturday, April 27th, this is the big one. They're going to have two music acts, Pat Guadagno followed by the Pontiacs, the Nip and Tuck food truck, Autocade's video game bus, a vendor village, an amazing cooking contest. They're calling it Top Chef Ross. You can make anything you want as long as it includes a Ross beer in the ingredients. Two categories of prizes, food and dessert. And then on Sunday, April 28th, to wrap it all up, a musician, Kelly Bruno, another food truck, the Dogs of Ross Brewing annual group photo as well, a karaoke contest, cornhole. They're going to have tons of stuff at Ross Brewing down in Middletown, New Jersey. Like I said, I'm trying to get down there for the Friday, April 26th show, and hopefully I can get there. Because it's been a while since I've been to Ross and actually sat down and had a couple of beers. And then finally, our good friends from Flagship Brewing, they're having their 10th anniversary of Flagship Brewing. It'll be taking place Saturday, May 11th from 2 p.m. to midnight right on Minthorn Street for a festival unlike any other that they've had before. Hosting an incredible lineup of local musicians, some of which helped us kick off our opening night back 10 years ago. And as a tribute to their humble beginnings, they're releasing a limited amount of the first beer they debuted when they opened the doors on May 16th, 2014. It's an iconic brew that holds a special place in the hearts of beer aficionados, honoring the brewery's rich history and enduring legacy. We can't wait to share more information about this special brew soon. I believe it's a pale ale, but don't quote me on that. Festival will also showcase an array of local craft, food, and record vendors, offering an eclectic mix of local artisans and businesses for you to support alongside ours. It's 2 p.m. to midnight on Saturday, May 11th. The Anniversary Fest is free to attend. All ages are welcome. The street is both family and pet friendly. Bring your friends, your family, and your pets with you. Great news. Finally, and one other thing, keeping it with Staten Island, Killsboro Pizza Party, Saturday, July 20th, noon to 4 p.m. at Snug Harbor Cultural Center. Unlimited beer samples from 20-plus breweries, slices from legendary New York City pizzerias. Early bird tickets will be going on sale soon. And there's going to be some news about the taproom opening very, very soon. Cannot wait for those things. When we come back after a short break for the next two segments, Chuck Aaron, the co-owner of Jersey Girl Brewing, will join me right from the tasting room in Mount Olive, New Jersey, for, again, two segments. This is the Algatullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970, The Answer. Welcome back to the Algatullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970, The Answer. Of course, you can follow me very easily. Twitter, it's now X, whatever it is. It's at Algatullo. Instagram, at Gatullo. They haven't changed that yet. GATTULLO. Facebook.com/AGCraftBeerCast. You can email me the old-fashioned way that they used to do in the 90s, AlbertG@NYCRadio.com. And don't forget, we're on iTunes. You just do a search for AG Craft Beer Cast. You can find all the shows there. We're Alexa Ready, Odyssey, all those different places. And also, iHeartRadio as well, but you can also check me out on the Hopped Up Network. You go on Mondays, a little bit, couple minutes after the show, about 5-6 minutes after the show, you can download the full version of the show, hoppedupnetwork.com. Now, my next guest, one of the founders of a brewery in Mount Olive, New Jersey. For me, it's the first time I've ever been here. It's a beautiful tasting room. They have a nice little beer garden right outside, just nestled in this beautiful community of Mount Olive. They're open Wednesday through Sunday, but this past weekend, even though we are taping this a few days before, they're celebrating their 8th anniversary. For more info on the brewery, you can follow their Facebook page or just head over to jerseygirlbrewing.com. It's been a while since this man has graced the show's presence, and it is nice to finally be here in person. Chuck Aaron, welcome back, sir. How are you?
Al, thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Now, 8 years, the Ocho. Congratulations on that. The last year and a half, though, let's face it, the last four have really not been kind to not only New Jersey breweries, but beer in general. How do you feel celebrating 8 years as a cornerstone in Mount Olive?
It's bittersweet. You know, you see lately a lot of breweries closing over the last year and a half. And we're excited to be able to celebrate 8 years. We're blessed that people still come out and support us through distribution in our states where we're available. But it's been a very tough year and a half. You know, if you go further back than that, you think about COVID, you think about the effect of being shut down for 6 months.
Right.
Benefit. You know, you always look at the good thing. We got a beer garden out of it. We got, you know, some outdoor space. I think that's it proved also during COVID how strong the brand is, because people came out, even though we weren't open, and still bought product to go and kept us alive during that period. So, yeah, it's been a tough, you know, 3-4 years almost for all breweries in New Jersey and across the country.
Yeah. The biggest change, though, for Jersey Girl right now, it's a brand refresh. New labels, artwork. Why was now the time to do that?
We had planned it last year. We were supposed to do it in year 7, and we got caught up just in the day-to-day, keeping the business alive, keeping the brand moving, you know, creating new beers. That brand refreshing just kind of took a sidestep. This year, it became vitally important to us. At 8 years, we need to change the labels. If you look at Rake Breaker, Sunkist, Citra, King, Mopills, those are brands that have been around for 7+ years in the market. Same label, same design, same great beer. Challenge is, you know, we get lost visually for people who've seen it on a shelf. So we refresh the brand, keep the beer inside amazing and great the way it has been, but we just wanted to do a refresh.
You want to pop. You want somebody, when they walk in and they see, you know, 60, 100 beers in a cooler, hey, that label stands out. Because let's face it, if they haven't had your beer before, or anybody's beer, a lot of times it's the visual that catches you to buy that particular beer. Unless you're a beer connoisseur. Even me, having, you know, had plenty of craft beer. If a label stands out to me in a store, I'm opting to buy that first, whether or not I know the brewery, whether or not I know the beer or the style of beer.
Absolutely. One of the big changes that drove the brand change refresh is that we're doing a variety pack now of our flagships, and we're going to a 12-ounce can for that variety pack. So we're hitting the shelves at like $19.99 for a 12-pack of 12-ounce cans. So in doing that variety pack and designing that box, looking at the brand, you look at it and you say, wow, I've been staring at the same label for 7 years. If I feel that way, I can imagine how the consumers feel, right? So that it all just became kind of it's the eighth year, let's do something great. So the last 2 months we've just been pushing hard to refresh the brand and make it new and exciting again.
I love the fact that you're shifting to 12-ounce cans, because this is an argument that I've had, or not an argument, but a discussion I've had with other beer people, that I think the 12-ounce can is the right amount for people that are drinking craft beer. I think that 16-ounce, you get that last 4 ounces sort of gets warm before you get to the end of it, unless you're drinking quick. So I think that's one of those things where I like seeing more beers in 12-ounce cans. I understand why people do the 16-ounce, but I think the 12-ounce is something that I think a lot more breweries could benefit from. We're talking with Chuck Aaron, the owner of Jersey Girl Brewing, located in Mount Olive, New Jersey, and we're here at the brewery. JerseyGirlBrewing.com is the website for more information on the Al Cthulhu Craft Beer Cast on AM 970, The Answer. Now, new beers for the anniversary celebration. Let's chat about the new Doppelbock. I'm drinking it right now. Give me the lowdown on this one.
So we, for the first time, we're doing a Doppelbock. We figured for the 8th anniversary, it's an 8% Doppelbock, so it fits right into the style. It's stylistically correct. Our brewer, you know, Dave, really put his heart and soul into building this beer, right? Because he's not done a Doppelbock. We haven't done a Doppelbock. Most of the time you do like a decoction, you go through a big process. We chose to go with a step mash instead. So you start your mash at a lower temperature, and every half hour to 45 minutes, you step that temperature up until you get to your full mash temperature. And it brings out a lot of different characteristics in the grain and the flavoring of the beer. So we went through a new process to build this beer. We're really happy with the way it came out. The color is spectacular. The head retention on it is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Lacing is fantastic. It's got a kind of a red hue to it, which is just beautiful. So and it tastes great.
Oh, it absolutely tastes great. I'm enjoying it. You're right about that head retention. There's still a bit of head in my glass, and the beer's been sitting here for a couple of minutes now. Chuck, what else do we have coming out for the anniversary weekend, and will any of these beers be available in distribution, or you got to come here and get it at the brewery?
The Ocho is out in distribution right now. Okay. The variety pack just went out to distribution. First round of variety packs almost sold out in distribution, which is great. We're going to have some here for the weekend, so we'll have the ability for people to come in and buy variety packs to go. We've got a couple of new beers on tap. We have an orange zinger. We have, you know, our Mojo, which has been on for about a month now, but that's going to be new to a lot of people. It's a mango habanero sour, which is a lot of fun to drink. And the orange zinger is orange and ginger on a sour. So we've tried to embrace the sour side of consumers' appetites, which seems to be growing and growing. So.
Yeah, that's interesting, because near me, Wet Ticket Brewing, which is right in Rahway, they really resisted doing sours for a while. And then Tim finally decided, all right, I'm going to just start playing around with it, because it's not a style that he was accustomed to brewing. And he had a lot of success with it. And now, you know, they're sort of creeping in, two or three, you know, on tap, sort of in a rotation. He's mixing with flavors and stuff. So it's interesting, because I was never a sour beer guy. And then I had my cancer. And after my cancer, I tried a sour beer again. My taste buds changed. I started to embrace sours. I don't know what it was, but maybe it was just, you know, the change in my body or whatever. I can't explain it, but before 2015, I'd be like, sour? No, I'm good. Now it's, that's good. You know, and you want something, especially if you don't do it on the regular, you want something that's approachable to people, that they're going to try it and go, oh, all right, I can get into this. And then they can gradually make their way into trying, you know, more sour beers or less sour, more tart, less tart. You know, you could play around with a lot of different variations there.
You don't jump right into a lambic, right?
Right.
You're going to find a lot of people will be turned off by that. Although it's a great style, it's not the first step you want to take into a sour. You want to bring people in. So we do more like a sweet tart kind of sour, right? Some a flavor that people are familiar with, and they go, wow, that's not what I expected a sour to be. When you hear sour, you think something that's very tough puckery on the palate. Puckery, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. We try to make it a little bit sweet and a little bit sour, so it's a fun experience to drink it. And then as we get into the more traditional sours, we'll hopefully bring people along that trip. I'd love to do a lambic. I'd like to really just go sour nuts and just your cheeks pucker, your eyes pop out, that kind of thing. We'll see what happens. We'll see.
Now, the mango habanero sour, how much heat is in that?
It's fun because there's also a lime in there. Uh-huh. So what happens is you get that sweetness on the front from the mango. The lime sits on the middle of your tongue. The heat hits the back of your mouth. So you get this layered effect across your palate that the sweetness hits you first. And then as you swallow, suddenly you get a little bit of that heat. On the second one, you get a little bit more heat. But it's you're going to try one. You're going to have to try it to understand how it works on the palate. But it's just a great experiment that worked out perfectly.
That's great, because I think the biggest thing with heat in beers is that you can go over the top if you do too much of it. Like, I remember when Ballast Point was doing the Habanero Sculpin, and you'd have one bottle, and it was mild heat. And then you'd have the next bottle, and it was loaded with heat. There was so much imbalance in it that it sort of turns people off to heat beers. And I've had heat beers where the heat is right there, it hits you, and it backs off. And then there are others where it's super oppressive, where it stays on you for a while you keep drinking it. And usually that's more in the stout category, where they just want you to get that chocolate and that heat and keep building and building. And that, to me, is a big turnoff.
I think that it's our same approach in our thoughts about 16-ounce cans. Consumers have been buying 16-ounce cans, and they'll open up a 4-pack. And to your point about sours or heat, mm-hmm. They'll have one, they may be able to finish the first one, or they start it and they can't finish it, let alone get through the whole 4-pack. Right. So we try to build beers that, whether they're in a 16-ounce can or a 12-ounce can, you can pour the whole thing and enjoy it all the way through, and maybe even go back for a second one, especially on the Mojo, which is our habanero or mango habanero lime. You could have two of those easily. The heat builds, but it's refreshing because that sweetness and that lime cleanse the palate and take it away afterwards. So it's almost, you're almost rebuilding it every time you have a sip.
Nice. We're talking with Chuck Aaron, the owner of Jersey Girl Brewing, located in Mount Olive, New Jersey. JerseyGirlBrewing.com, the website for more information here on the Al Gattulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to chat a little bit more with Chuck of Jersey Girl Brewing in just a moment on the Al Gattulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. Welcome back to the Al Gattulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. We're coming to you from Jersey Girl Brewing, Mount Olive, New Jersey. They are celebrating the Ocho. It's the 8th anniversary this weekend. So this interview airing at the very end of the celebration. The brewery, of course, long closed at this point on a Sunday night. But Chuck Aaron rejoins me now on the program. You've got your annual charity golf outing that takes place Friday, May 24th at the Flanders Golf Course. It's going into its fifth year. It is now officially sold out. What charity does the golf outing benefit?
It's St. Jude's Pediatric Cancer Research. My son at 10 years old was diagnosed with cancer, and we went through that whole process with him. The community, the town, everybody came together when they found out, and they respected our privacy, but they helped us through a very tough situation. Mm-hmm. So I always said in my life, there's going to be a point where I'm going to be able to give back. And that's where this golf outing comes in. We have sold out. This is the fifth year, like you said. Mm-hmm. We sold out again. Almost 140 players on a golf course. It is going to be tight. But the fun part about it is I put a beer on every other hole. We have a lot of fun activities for people to do throughout the day. We have some par three activities. And it all goes to charity. It all goes back. And I'm glad I'm able to do it. And it's important to us as a business to keep doing that.
But speaking of giving back, for those that don't know, in addition to being the owner of this business, you're also a councilman from Mount Olive. Why is it so important for you, aside from what the town did for you, coming together for your son when he had cancer, why is it so important for you to give back to the community in an additional way?
I think it's part of my life goal. You know, you hit a point in your life where I've been blessed in a lot of different ways. I've been blessed with an amazing family. I've got a great partner here at the business. We run a fantastic brewery. I've had the opportunity to learn from some great people in life, see great things in life. I just find I'm at that age right now and at that point in my life where it's time to give back. It's time to help people out. I'm trying to figure out a way to get involved with my old college and a local Centenary College with their entrepreneur programs to help students who want to embrace business or want to go out there and do something different and mentor, you know, coach, counsel. The town is important because I've been here 19 years. I've been involved in football. I've been involved in baseball. I've been involved in basketball. I've sat on various boards for those programs. We have a beautiful community here. It's an amazing town. Mount Olive is just a beautiful gem right on the edge of Morris County and Warren County. We're about as close to Warren County as you can get without going into it. So I want to make sure that the town continues to thrive the way it does. And that's why we have our business here. That's why we do everything we can here in town to build it up.
I mean, and it's great when a town embraces a business like a brewery. I mean, we've seen this all throughout New Jersey. As we're talking with Chuck Aaron, the owner of Jersey Girl Brewing, located in Mount Olive, New Jersey here. JerseyGirlBrewing.com, the website for more information. We're here on the Al Gattullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970, The Answer. And, you know, what's great about what you do and what this town does is allows a business like this to thrive, where there are other towns that shy away from breweries. They think it's, you know, oh, it's a lot of young kids hanging out and, you know, horsing around and stuff. And, you know, it's great to have a town that supports you and supports your business and allows you the freedom to do the things where there are some breweries in other towns where, I mean, I don't want to name names, but there's a brewery down south that is moving to another town because the town that they're in right now was not welcoming of them and really gave them, I don't want to say gave them the shaft, but, you know, basically said, okay, you can set up here, but we're really not going to do anything to help you or promote you. And so that business is moving, not too far away, but moving to, you know, to a place where they're welcoming that type of business. That's got to be a great a relief for you that you have a town that supports what you do.
It is. They ask questions. When we first opened up, it took a year and a half to get opened up, and it was a combination of waiting for equipment to come, getting our lease in place, getting our variances in place to open up our business here. But the town did ask a lot of questions. They were very curious. They were concerned about things that you're talking about, mm-hmm. and we had to educate, right, and bring them into the understanding that we're part of a community, we're a destination, we're not a place where people are going to come and hang out all night. We close at 10 o'clock at night. People can then go to bars and restaurants and spend the rest of their night having a great time. Right. It's unfortunate, the story you're talking about, because we have it here locally as well in Morris County. We have a business that opened up in a downtown area, all the expectations of thriving and growing, and success is their enemy, right? Because now some of the other businesses feel like, oh, you're taking away parking from us. You're bringing too many people to the town, which is an unbelievable thought, right? It is, right. I flood the streets with people who are bringing money to shop at our restaurants and eat our food and buy our wares and support our local businesses. So it's shocking to hear still that exists in some places, but I understand because I see it locally happening as well.
Yeah, and that's a shame because that's what you want. You want more people in your town to congregate in those businesses. Do you want people to go? And I'm not trying to knock Amazon or any of these bigger businesses, but is that what you're trying to do? You're trying to chase them away to the big box business because it's convenient for you to click a couple of times on your computer and get the thing that you want. That, to me, that's not a good thing. Now, last year, Chuck, we had a ton of turmoil, a lot of it, in my opinion, from the governor rejecting the New Jersey legislature's unanimous passing of a beer bill that would have provided relief. And again, the legislature doesn't vote on too many things unanimously, so that in itself was a wonderful thing. And then the governor sort of, you know, put a kibosh on it. It finally got done, but there were a few months before the end of the year and even into January where things were shaky, where a lot of us were not sure whether or not this legislation was going to pass. How has the lifting of restrictions helped Jersey Girl Brewing?
It's tremendous. I'll say this one thing about having been part of that process and being down in Trenton. Right. Not only did it pass the Assembly and the Senate unanimously, there was great enthusiasm within the Senate and the Assembly for passing this bill. They said it was overdue, it was necessary, it was important to an industry that was growing and thriving. And I agree. I think that to have the veto come out within 24 hours, no, there was a conditional veto. And then to look at the things that were, even the second time it went through unanimously, mm-hmm. right? The conditions that were added are, I call it fluff and stuff. It's political game. It's, you know, hey, I've got this great industry that's growing. I want some things. They throw it onto a bill. It has no relevance to craft beer. Correct. Or craft spirits, or, you know, it's not just a craft beer bill. We brought spirits in. We brought meaderies and cideries in. So not only do breweries benefit, all these other businesses benefit because it's a community of manufacturers. Right. And so I think, you know, in some cases, I think it's a little, it's too little too late. You know, it was a tough third quarter last year. It's a tough first quarter this year, not just for us, for all breweries and spirits, and everybody's feeling the crunch. It's a consumer crunch. I think there's an underlying issue in the state. People are struggling financially. I don't care what is said in, you know, the economy's thriving in this. People are at a fundamental in their house, struggling to get day to day. And I don't care, you can raise a minimum wage to $20 an hour. Unless you start effectively spending wiser, reducing the cost of living, get food costs down again. You know, everything's just so darn expensive in New Jersey. So, you know, we're feeling it as breweries, and you could see it in the number of breweries that have closed. But we've kind of got this far, and we're going to make it through our 8th anniversary, and then we're taking it a little less, you know, 3 years down the road, because right. You really don't know what's coming in 3 years anymore. You used to be able to do 1-3-5 year planning. Now it's like, gosh, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Right. Let's just kind of do the best we can for the next 30 days. And we have an annual plan, but we just have to be, if anything, we've learned how to become flexible and more nimble as a business, which is a benefit, I guess, if you look at it from the positive side. We're very creative as myself and my management team. Of what do we do next, right? And I think to survive, a lot of the breweries are embracing that concept.
Well, I think you're 100% right. It's having to pivot and be able to pivot in a way that benefits your business is the reason why you survive. The businesses that have closed never planned for those things. They just assumed, okay, things will just get better and, you know, I'll figure it out as I go along. You have to be mobile in moving things around because you're right. You're unsure of what's happening. And especially you bring up the point about inflation and food. Disposable income is the first thing that people put aside when they're having a tough time. We're not going to go out and go to the restaurant and go eat. We're not going to go buy clothes, or we're not going to go to the brewery and have a beer. That's going to get tucked away. But from your standpoint as a brewery, you have to look at the price of grain, the price of hops. If you don't have a contract with somebody for canning or whatever, now you're having to move because prices are going up and maybe you haven't budgeted for that. So you have to be aware of those things. And that affects price point in beer. It affects, you know, a litany of other things. So again, being nimble and being able to, you know, pivot from that and say, okay, maybe we're not going to do this, but we're going to do that. I know of a number of breweries who said, I'm not brewing this beer this year because I can't get this particular hop that I want because it's too expensive or it's not available. And now I have to wait until maybe next year, or I might not be able to brew it at all. So I think you bring up some valid points. Now, last question for me, Chuck. An earthquake hit not far from here, week ago Friday. Do you have a name for an earthquake beer? Because you have to make one at this point.
So the best name that's come up is Quake Shake. So we haven't brewed it yet, but I think Quake Shake would be a great concept, although I don't want to do anything with lactose right now. I'm just kind of I'm a little bit
lactosed out.
I'm lactosed out on all that stuff. A little tired of that fad, but
right.
I think that we have to kind of get cute about it. And I was standing right here when it first hit, like literally standing right here, and I ran out back because I thought something had happened with one of the tanks. And to watch a 60 barrel tank rock back and forth, yeah, it was a little nerve-wracking around here. It hit about 4.8 on the Richter, so
right. Everything
moved in here.
Yeah, I was in my office in Manhattan getting ready to leave, and the ground shook, and I went, I thought it was a truck coming up the street, and then I realized, nah, it was too sustained, and I'd been in an earthquake before, so I was like, all right, it's an earthquake. And I got a text from my wife literally like 10 seconds later because she's in Warren, New Jersey. She was like, did you feel that was an earthquake? I'm like, yeah, I know. I got it. You know, and a lot of people just in Manhattan were kind of like, oh, it's an earthquake. All right, whatever. You go about your business. But I love that, Quake Shake. That is a great name for a beer. My guest is with Chuck Aaron, the owner of Jersey Girl Brewing, located in Mount Olive, New Jersey. The 8th anniversary was this weekend, but come in. They got plenty of beer here. It's a great little spot in Mount Olive. JerseyGirlBrewing.com, the website for more information. Chuck, thanks so much for having me here tonight. Thanks for the beer. I cannot wait to try the Mango Habanero, but Much success, my friend, and congratulations to 8 years.
Yeah, thanks, Al. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Up next, it's time for Suds and Duds on the Al Gattullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970, The Answer. Final segment of the Al Gattullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970, The Answer, a little Metal Gods from Judas Priest, from the British Steel album, which was, you know, it was released this week. Some say it was released on the 14th of April. Others say it was released on the 11th. I think, if memory serves, it was released on the 11th of April in England, in Europe, and on the 14th in America. I could be wrong, but again, it was sometime this week that British Steel came out. And what an epic album it was and still is. Ranked in 2017 third on Rolling Stone's list of 100 greatest metal albums of all time. Now, again, take lists with a grain of salt, because no matter what, it all depends on, you know, what you enjoy and what you like. And you can have albums rated higher or lower depending on where they are. It was also the first album that featured Dave Holland, who was on British Steel, Point of Entry, Scream for Vengeance, Defenders of the Faith, Ram It Down, and then after, I believe he left after Ram It Down, because they were using a lot of Turbo. Oh, I forgot. See, I forgot Turbo. Turbo, and then Ram It Down, and I believe he left after. It was either after Turbo or after Ram It Down. I don't remember, but anyway, I can't wait to see the boys. God, it's 5 days. Next Friday, this coming Friday, I'll be at Prudential Center. Rocking out. Can't not wait to see the boys from Birmingham rock it again. And again, when I say boys from Birmingham, it's really two guys. It's Rob Halford and Ian Hill. And I suspect that Glenn Tipton will be playing as well, but we shall see. Anyway, let us dive into Suds and Duds. Daylily by Autodidact at Paragon Tap and Table. This is so good. Softer than a traditional pale ale. This is definitely one I could have over and over again. And Autodidact makes some great beer. I really need to get by their tasting room. I have not been there, but Craig, the general manager now over at Paragon, is a big fan of Autodidact, likes them a lot, and gets them in on the regular, which is always a good thing. Another beer that they get in on the regular that Mike, who used to be there and is now, I believe Mike's up in Vermont now, what he was getting in and is now in the state, and I love it because I pretty much get whatever they bring in, foam brewing. Foam brewers make some fantastic stuff. So you got Alone at the Rodeo is one of the ones that I had there. Impressed. I did not think that this was going to be a malty caramel beer, but it was very, very tasty and very happy that it was that. I was expecting something else. Maybe I had the description wrong. I don't know. But then I got a can of the Ark of Petals, because one of my buddies was having that, and he said, you got to get this. It's really good. And he was absolutely right. A nice, delicious, hazy IPA. And then finished off with on tap Oak Flower. First cup, Papua New Guinea. First cup. Obviously, they're using Papua New Guinea coffee in this stout. A delicious stout. Roasty, coffee, smooth. Had all those elements that you want without being too overpowering, which is what I like. So very much enjoyed that one from Oak Flower. And Oak Flower, another brewery that's putting out some fantastic beers. Not too far from the Sterling Hotel in the Long Hill region of New Jersey. Definitely go over and check them out. Not too far off 78. You will not be disappointed at Oak Flower. And if you're taking the train, Millington train station will get you there. Drops you right off, and it's directly across the street. So Wet Ticket has a new beer coming out. It's out. I think it's out. It's not on draft right now. I believe it is coming out in cans sometime very soon. If it wasn't this week, it's definitely going to be next week or the week after. Nectrasonic Boom. Knocked it out of the park with this one, Tim. You absolutely did. Juicy, delicious. I think Nectaron is probably one of my favorite hops when it comes to
being in IPAs. It's got that juicy citrus quality without being too acidic, which I actually enjoy, and it's one that I can go back to the well over and over and over again and not be disappointed. I think this clocks in, I want to say this clocks in somewhere around 6.5%. It's an excellent beer. I have to say, Tim, you nailed it. I love it. I'm so glad that this is eventually going to be in cans very soon, if it's not already, and that's good stuff. Murphy's Law by District 96. Kim, who is a beer tender at Wet Ticket, makes trips to District 96, Tin Bar, and other places, and she brings me back some stuff. We trade beers back and forth, Kim and Colleen. Both have an Instagram page. It's called Cracked One at the Summit. You want to follow it on Instagram. It's a lot of fun. They spotlight a lot of the beers that they drink, whether just sitting at home or on a hike, hence the word, hence the account, Cracked One at the Summit. So Murphy's Law, perfect, delicious Irish stout. Dry finish, nice and roasty, not too strong, just really gives you exactly what you need. Fantastic. Then had the Snake Orchid by District 96, which was a collab with, I think this was a collab with Oak Flower. I don't have the can in front of me, but I believe this was one with Oak Flower. And I have to tell you, this does not taste like a 12% beer. Tropical, juicy. I did not guzzle this one down. This is one that I drank over 30, 45 minutes. So it did warm up a little bit, which really, that's not what you want. You want to drink it while it's cold. But I didn't want to bang away at a 12%, or especially I'd already had a couple. Just wasn't, you know, looking forward to banging back a 12%. But let me tell you something. I'm glad I did, because it doesn't taste like a 12% beer. It was delicious. Thank you, Kim. Really do appreciate that. Fantastic beer. Then one of the beers that I picked up at Six Point, and if you haven't been to Six Point at Brookfield Place, you should absolutely go there, because it is it's good stuff. So Apricot and Plum Sour. Now, I had this at the kickoff to New York City Beer Week, and I couldn't place the name of it. I was trying to figure out, and I couldn't remember. But I have to tell you, I love the plum flavor in this. It's not too tart. It's a solid sour. It is really delicious. It's their Subway series. This is a fantastic beer. And I love plums. So anything with a plum in it, I want to try. It's great. I honestly thought this was going to pour more purplish than it did. It poured more like, you know, what you would get out of a sour. I'm very impressed. Very impressed at how good it tasted. Just really enjoyed that beer a whole heck of a lot. I only got one can of it. I probably should have gotten more. And if there's next time I'm back there, if there is a couple cans, I may end up picking that up. And then finally, from BrewDog USA, the Santa Paws. I like I said, they sent me a whole bunch of beers, and I'm trying to get through them. This was sort of their take on, I don't know what this was, but it was awful. Like, there was cranberry. There was something else in it. I'm trying to see. Let me see if I pull up the cranberry and grapefruit IPA. I was not impressed with this at all. It tasted terrible. Now, I don't know what they were looking for in this. I don't know where they were going, but whatever it was, it did not achieve what it was. It was garbage. I'm sorry. It was a drain pour for me. I took three sips. I couldn't really get past any one of the sips, and I poured it out because it was that bad. I'm sorry, but if I don't like something, I'm going to tell you, and that one was something I definitely didn't like. Folks, my thanks to everybody involved in the show, as well as my guest, Chuck Aaron at Jersey Girl Brewing, and of course, last but not least, the great Buddy Watson. I will have a full recap of the Atlantic City Beer and Music Fest on next week's program, but for now, I'll be back live on the Joe Piscopo Show Monday at 6 a.m. This has been the Al Gattulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. Cheers, everybody.